put a smile upon my face when there was nothing left but sorrow. You showed me how to live again, and I'm so grateful for your love.
USA Today recently described Neil Sedaka as an easy listening icon. To celebrate his 50th year in show business, the singer-songwriter has come out with a CD called the Definitive Collection, which contains a combination of his early hits like Breaking Up Is Hard to Do and more recent hits like Solitaire. We're listening to his latest just on the Billboard charts called You. And the record is being released by Razor and Tie. I'm very pleased it has brought Neil Sedaka to my show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm sure that when you started out 50 years ago, you being called an icon someday was about the farthest thing from your mind.
Well, I worked very hard. I started as a student of the piano at the Juilliard School. I studied with some wonderful teachers, Edgar Roberts and Adele Marcus. And then at 13, I discovered that I could write songs. And it's wonderful to be able to play the Wallstein piano sonata, but it's more wonderful to be able to travel around the world as a musical ambassador singing your own compositions.
Does being labeled easy listening, icon or not, is that okay with you?
Well, you know, I took great pains to write different kinds of songs. And on this collection, there's some funky songs, there's some bluesy songs, there are some ballads, but I suppose my biggest commercial success was Easy Listening, Laughter in the Rain and Hungry Years and Solitaire. But when I used to buy albums as a kid, that dates me, albums, I always was disappointed when the songs all sounded the same, so I made a conscious effort to write different kinds of songs.
Now, the first song that you performed for your classmates at Lincoln High School in Brooklyn was Mr. Moon. That didn't make it to this album. Did you ever record it?
I was 16 years old. No, I did it for a Ballyhoo Auditorium concert at Lincoln High School in Brighton Beach, and that was at the beginning of rock and roll. And the principal at the time, Abraham Lass, was not a fan of rock and roll, and there was a bit of a riot amongst the kids. And there was a second performance, and he asked me into his office. He said, "Neil, we'll have you on, but don't repeat Mr. Moon. It makes them too wild."
Now you want to hear something really coincidental. When I first started doing the show 22 years ago, Abe Lass was one of the regular visitors.
You're kidding.
No, he wore the bow tie, as I'm sure he did at Lincoln.
Yes, and he was a pianist himself. And we convinced him. The children wrote a petition that they wanted Neil Sedaka to do Mr. Moon on the second performance. And then I was accepted by all the DA haircuts and the leather sets.
And you wrote that with your neighbor, Howard Greenfield.
Mm-hmm. One of the longest collaborations in pop music of the Brill Building School. We collaborated for 30 years.
Really? So you went into the Brill Building when you were how old?
I was 17, 18 years old. And it was Alden Music, Neil Diamond, Paul Simon. I brought Carole King into Alden Music, into the Brill Building.
Isn't that where Carole King and Jerry Goffin got together? After you stopped dating her.
That's right. I had a few dates.
I hope it was after you stopped dating her.
A few dates with Carole Klein, her name was at the time, and brought her up to the publishing firm, and she did rather well herself.
And you wrote O'Carroll.
I did, and she followed with a song called O'Neill, which in those days there were Answer Records, Leonard, and hers was less successful. But it's a collector's item.
So first you started just doing some of the songwriting at the Brill Building when you were in high school, but then they hired you full-time as a 9-to-5 job?
I went into an office from 10 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, 5 days a week in a tiny cubicle with no windows. And when you got a hit or two, you graduated to a room with windows. So I'm happy to say that happened to me. And I was the first in the Brill Building set to sing my own songs. I was very fortunate. Between 1958 and 1963, I had 10 top 10 records in a row.
And what were your parents doing about all of this? Had they wanted you to become a pop singer-songwriter?
No, I had every intention, and they had every intention of me becoming a concert pianist. I entered a competition when I was 16 years old on WQXR. May I mention that station?
Absolutely.
And Otto Rubinstein chose me as one of the top five New York City high school pianists, and I played the third sonata of Prokofiev. So my mother and father were a bit disappointed at first. My father was a taxi driver named Max. We called him Maxie the Taxi. And he worked hard to put me through and was hoping that I would be a concert pianist.
Do you see any of that in the songwriting? Obviously, it would take a very sophisticated listener to hear Prokofiev in one of these songs.
No, but you can hear Chopin and you can hear Villa-Lobos. It definitely has rubbed off in my pop writing.
And your first real big commercial hit was for Connie Francis?
Yes, Stupid Cupid. I remember walking to I was living with my family in 1958, and I went to the mailbox and retrieved a check from the record company. And I walked in very excited to my mom and said, "Oh, look, here's a check for $2,500. And my mother reread it, and she said, "It's $25,000. And I fell off the chair. Mm. So I realized then that I wanted to continue writing and recording.
And she did well by you. She also did one of your other songs, Where the Boys Are?
Yes, and on this definitive collection, there's a demonstration record of mine of Where the Boys Are.
And at this point, you're still just writing for other people?
I was writing for Bobby Darin and Johnny Mathis and Peggy Lee and Shirley Bassey. It's wonderful when you can have cover records, but most of them listen to my original version on record.
Well, I'm sure that when people heard those demos, they realized that you could sing. How come it took so long? You had to wait until you were 19 before you got your own record contract.
The voice was unusual. I sold my songs to Jerry Wexler and Ahmet Erdogan on Atlantic Records. And every time they took a song for Laverne Baker or Clyde McFadder, I would say, "But Jerry, what about me singing them?" He said, I don't know. They were into the rhythm and blues at the time. But I got a call from Jerry Wexler recently, and he said, "I kick myself for not signing you in the early 50s.
Because later they started signing other kinds of artists and did very well with them on Atlantic.
Yes.
But at that time, the whole business was very compartmentalized, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the Clovers and the Cardinals and R&B mostly when I was writing for them.
And were you writing doo-wop songs?
Yes, I had a group called the Tokens, which I started in Lincoln High School, who went on to do The Lion Sleeps Tonight. We sang at local bar mitzvahs and weddings and local hops, and then I went on as a solo career.
My guest is Neil Sedaka. His CD, The Definitive Collection, has just been released by Razor and Tie. I want to say records, but I don't know what we call it anymore. I guess Razor and Tie CD?
We're almost the same era. I would say I'm number 22 on the hit parade, which dates me. I say they call it a CD, yes.
Now, you developed a distinctive style which involved the use of three voices. You weren't the first person to do multiple tracks of your own voice.
In rock and roll, I was.
Really?
I learned it by listening to, I used to listen to the make-believe ballroom, Patti Page and Rosemary Clooney.
And Les Paul and Mary Ford.
Les Paul and Mary Ford. And I loved harmony singing, and I was inspired to do it on my own. That was a Neil Sedaka trademark, singing multiple voices.
In this the CD, you've included two versions of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, a fast version, which went to number one in the pop charts in 62, and then a ballad version, which also went to the top of the charts in 1975. I was singing the song in the shower this morning.
And,
really? Yeah, because I knew you were coming on. And I suddenly thought, you know, you made Breaking Up sound so cheerful in that first version.
Yes.
Was that something that you were even concerned about?
Well, the fact that it was a serious sentiment, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, and the melody was happy, was an interesting marriage of words and music. And in those days, the songs were happy and positive and up and bright.
You never heard The Way You Dog Me Around by the Diablos, obviously.
No. But then 15 years later, I realized that it worked as a gin mill song, and I slowed it down. I was very inspired by the great Dinah Washington, and I had her in mind when I slowed it down and re-recorded it as a ballad.
Well, we'll take a little break, and we'll go out with the first version and come back with the ballad version.
Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do. Don't you leave my heart in misery. 'Cause if you go, then I'll be blue. Breaking up is hard to do. Remember when me all through the night. Think of all that we've been through, and breaking up is hard to do.
Neil Sedaka has written many very, very famous songs, but I think most people associate Breaking Up Is Hard to Do with him. Perhaps because it was the first huge hit.
I had a few before. I had Calendar Girl before, and Happy Birthday, Sweet 16, and Oh Carol, which were international hits.
Well, maybe this has a bit more of a broader appeal.
Perhaps.
But also, listening to your voice in the various songs and the most recent recording, I'm struck by how little it's changed. Many people, when they hit their 60s, have developed a few cracks and crannies.
I try to take very good care of my voice. I don't have iced drinks. I won't go into a room that's very loud, so I have to shout to be heard. I will not sit in a very highly air-conditioned room, and I get enough sleep and exercise. So I'm very fortunate that the voice has held.
The interim between the first Breaking Up and the second involved the Beatles, the British Invasion, and a lot of Motown and all sorts of other changes. What did that mean to you?
Well, the English influx stopped a lot of us. In 1963, my record sales stopped for about 10 or 11 years, and I wrote for other people, and had the good fortune of meeting Elton John in London, who was a fan of mine and wanted to hear some of my new compositions in the 70s. And he was starting a record company called Rocket Records and signed me to his label. And lo and behold, we put out a record called Sedaka's Back, which had Love Will Keep Us Together on it and Laughter in the Rain. And I thank Elton for being a mentor and responsible for a remarkable comeback.
It also had the second version of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
That's right.
Now, Laughter in the Rain, another one of those songs that kind of has a broader appeal. Mm-hmm. At a time when the music business seems to be aimed so specifically at one group or another. I mean, it's become, I guess, more demographically conscious than it ever was.
There was a time of a singer-songwriter, Cat Stevens, Joni Mitchell, Gordon Lightfoot, and Laughter in the Rain. You can't write Laughter in the Rain in one day. It took 20-some-odd years for me to be able to write a Laughter in the Rain.
What about arrangements? How involved were you in how these records actually sounded?
Well, I got together with the arrangers and planned the bass line. When I played the piano on the demo, my left hand was the bass notes, and the right hand were the sweeteners, the violins and the cellos. So I sat for a long time with the arrangers to make sure that they understood it and married it well.
Now, Love Will Keep Us Together was actually a bigger hit for Captain and Tennille.
Mine was on the recording, Sadaka's Back, but Captain and Tennille put it out as a single and launched their career.
And you've had any number of songs recorded by, you mentioned a few, but I can mention others, Cher, Patsy Cline, Dinah Washington, that has to be a thrill.
Oh, yes.
Wilson Pickett, Tom Jones, Sheryl Crow, ABBA, Gloria Estefan. So do you follow all of those cover records?
Absolutely. It's very flattering when someone records one of my songs. And Love Will Keep Us Together was a marvelous rendition by the Captain and Tennille. It was the most played song of 1975, and I won a Grammy for it.
So do you have favorites?
You know, I loved Shirley Bassey's Solitaire. And Clay Aiken from American Idol a couple of years ago, a young good singer, did a wonderful version. And Peggy Lee was a favorite of mine, did One More Ride on the Merry-Go-Round. There, some that I didn't like, we won't mention, but it's very nice when the great artists do them.
I'm sure it hurts at times. I know Irving Berlin was very upset by the Drifters' version of White Christmas because it didn't fit in with his vision of the song. But
I didn't think so, but Clyde McFadden's falsetto was marvelous.
Were you serving as a celebrity judge on American Idol when Clay Aiken released the song?
Yes, and Leonard, I'll tell you, I was a fan of the show. People said, why don't you go on? I said, oh, there's probably thousands of people who want to be a celebrity judge. I called up personally and spoke to a Susan Slamer, who was on the staff. I picked up the phone. I said, hello, Susan, I'm Neil Sedaka. And she said, is this a joke? I said, no. She said, well, we're having a meeting. I'll call you back. And she called me back and said, well, in two weeks you're on as a celebrity judge, and the five finalists will be singing Neil Sedaka's songs. And Reuben Studdard was on, and Clay, and Trinise, and Kimberly Locke, wonderful young singers. I think 30 million people watched that evening. It was very difficult to go to the supermarket.
Well, it must have given a boost to your royalty checks again.
Yes, the catalogs went through the roof. The old repackages in the catalog went through the roof.
Another song that you recorded with Elton John, actually one where he provided backup vocals, was Bad Blood, which went to number one for a little while. And James Brown told you that he liked that song.
Yes, he said, Neil, now you're in my territory doing Bad Blood. Elton was very gracious. He promised that he would come to the studio and do the background vocals. So I had one of the most expensive background vocalists of all time, and it turned out very well. Once again, a conscious effort to write something new and fresh. As a creative artist, you always try to develop and grow and do something that excites you, that's new.
Well, with all of these hits, you don't have to work now, do you? Because I'm sure royalty checks continue to come in, and I don't know if you're ASCAP or BMI.
I am BMI. I love it, of course. I love being in front of a live audience. And I have to keep my wife Lieber in the style she's accustomed. And the performance brings in a lot. But, you know, the greatest annuity is the songwriting, as you might know. Because the songwriter gets, in the long run, radio plays and television plays, and that really is the annuity.
And I understand that recently you've been writing children's songs. You're a grandfather?
Yes, a new grandfather. I have three beautiful grandchildren. My son has twin girls and a son, and they've convinced me to do a children's album. So I decided to take some of the old songs and rewrite the lyrics for children. So I did Waking Up Is Hard to Do and Where the Toys Are. And my son, who is a writer himself, has a concept to do a television show called Papa Neil's Penthouse, where I will have children on with me and different characters, and it's a work in progress.
You said that you had a very long collaboration with your co-writer for the very first song, Mr. Moon, Howard Greenfield. Mm-hmm. He wrote the lyrics and you wrote the music? Was it simply that?
It was a close collaboration. I did some lyrics and he did some music. And then years later, I collaborated with a Phil Cody, who did Laughter in the Rain and Solitaire with me, and Carol Bea Sager, who did some songs with me. We never had a hit, but we had a lot of fun.
She's a great collaborator with others as well.
Oh, yes, indeed. And now, the last 25 years or so, I've been writing my own lyrics. And Leonard, for so many years, people put words in my mouth. I think it's different when it comes from my own soul, and people can sense that. And I love writing lyrics. They're like puzzle pieces.
Do you write? Did the lyrics come to you as you're writing the melody?
Both. But being a pianist, most of the time I'll write a piece of a melody first.
What about all the old friends from the Brill Building, Ellie Greenwich and Barry Mann and Jeff Barry, Cynthia Weil, Neil Diamond? I think even Paul Simon came along while you were there. Do you all keep up with each other?
We see each other occasionally, absolutely. We're from the same beginnings, and I will see Carole King occasionally. I will see Neil Diamond, who lived across the street from me in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. We both went to Lincoln High School. And it was a phenomenon in those days. There were a lot of Brooklynites who were very musical. Maybe it was in the egg cream or in the water. I don't know, but Barbara Streisand, Barry Manilow, Paul Simon, New Yorkers and Brooklynites who were very musical.
Barry Manilow went to my high school, Eastern District.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Sedaka, who went to Lincoln High, has a new album out called The Definitive Collection. It is from Razor and Tie. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. And we'll go out with one of the biggest hits of all time, Laughter in the Rain.
Thank you for inviting me. Pleasure talking.
With my baby, it starts to rain.